Just before showtime, let's play hardball. Oh, wait, what? No? Okay, wrong. Oh, sorry, wrong show. Hey, welcome, truth seekers. Fiscal terrorism. That's what I meant to say. GOP fiscal terrorism. Rewriting the lead just before showtime, indeed. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Welcome, truth seekers. Yes, once again, it is I, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow drafted into duty, pulled out from behind the desk of bradblog.com, brought to you tonight to sit in, to fill in for Mike Malloy, who is on his way or is now in Seattle for the Progressive Voices Conference at our affiliate, AM 1090. And I will be with you tonight and again on Monday before he returns. And, of course, as usual, whenever I'm here hosting the show, yes, you can bet something is going to blow up. In the case of Norway, quite literally blew up this morning, unfortunately. And then this afternoon, within the past hour or two, this fake crisis. I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it. This completely phony, completely ginned up crisis by the Republicans over the debt ceiling. John Boehner, late this afternoon, we learn he walked out of the talks. Obama has said we are now out of time. The debt ceiling talks are now in apparent meltdown. And this entirely fake fiscal crisis now nears a boiling point with a meeting called by the president tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. We will joining us momentarily, we'll have David Dayen with the latest from Fire Dog Lake. I just want to note that Barack Obama came out and held a late evening, or I guess for us out here in Los Angeles. Did I mention we're broadcasting from the left coast? Thank you, we are. K-Talk AM 1150. He came out late this afternoon, gave a very frustrated press conference remarks, answered some questions, followed by Boehner, who came out about 30 minutes later and gave his side of the story. We will have both sides of those stories tonight, figure out who's telling the truth with David Dayen. Also later in this show, as we juggle things around here, we'll have Bob Fitrakis, the investigative journalist and attorney from Ohio's ColumbusFreePress.org. He will join us with some new news on the 2004 presidential election in Ohio. How's that? Yes, we will have some more news on that and that election fraud case that is still pending now, 8 years later, or whatever we are, concerning Mike Connell, who was the GOP IT guru who tragically died and suddenly died in a plane crash before Christmas in 2008. We will get to all of those details in the show ahead, as well as your calls at 877-520-1150. Write it down, 877-520-1150. You're going to want that. You're also going to want to stop by the bradblog.com chat room, because it goes on during the show whenever I am live on the air for Mike, and it's a lively discussion there, moderated tonight as usual by the lovely Desi Doyen, and I think Four Earth is there, isn't she? So far, just Desi doing. Okay, hopefully For Earth and Dale and all the other folks, come on by and say hello. They are very nice. What else? You can reach me anytime on the Twitters at TheBradBlog. Got it? Good. Let's go to David Dayen here of Fire Dog Lake from the news desk there, news.firedoglake.com. Hey, David, how are you, sir?
Hi, how you doing, Brad?
I'm okay. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, and thank you for being willing to jump in here at the last minute, given all of this insane breaking news. I thought what I would do, if this works for you, I've got the first few minutes of the Obama press conference.
Okay.
That I'd love to play, and we can start and stop, because I've got some questions for you about some of the comments that are made as we try to unwind what is really going on here, if we can read between the lines a bit. Sound okay?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, here we go. Let's play a minute or so, and I'll like I say, Tony, I'm going to stop and start. Go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. I wanted to give you an update on the current situation around the debt ceiling. I just got a call about a half hour ago from Speaker Boehner, who indicated that he was going to be walking away from the negotiations that we've been engaged in here at the White House for a big deficit reduction and debt reduction package.
Okay, now stop it right there. Right. David, he just got this call. Can you clarify to me what was going on? What is this business about? He had called him last night and did not return his call for 24 hours. Is that correct?
I believe that's what the story is. And, you know, I mean, if you just want to back up, this whole thing is kind of crazy. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we heard that John Boehner and Barack Obama were engaged in putting together a big deal, a $4 trillion deficit reduction package. And in walked Eric Cantor and the rest of the GOP caucus, and they said, we don't accept it because it includes some tax revenue, some tax increases. So everybody went back to the drawing board. There was work on a smaller deal. There was this Mitch McConnell solution. And
that's Plan Z, right, that we'll talk about in a bit.
Z,
okay, we'll get to that.
Then this week, all of a sudden, oh, wait, Boehner and Obama are talking about a big deal with $3 to $4 trillion in deficit reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And today, what did it fall apart on? The exact same thing on tax increases, on the fact that Boehner could not get his caucus to agree to increasing taxes in any meaningful way. So, you know, I don't see what changed in those 2 weeks. Nothing did, apparently, because the talks broke down once again. This is the second time. In fact, I think Obama later on says, I've been left at the altar twice on this deal.
Where these guys walked away, where first Cantor walked away and now Boehner walked away. All right, let's get some of the...
It's really a square peg in a round hole. They're trying to put this deal together, but you have an entire party that just does not want to do the deal.
And didn't everybody see this coming months ago, that there was never going to be a real deal, at least not until the showdown at midnight, just the way we saw on the budget crisis?
It's not for lack of trying on Obama's part, much to his detriment, I would argue. He has been willing to give away the farm here if he would only get a little bit of revenue so he could get cover for his base, to say that at least he extracted something out of these talks.
Let's get some of the details.
Republicans wouldn't even do that.
Let's get some of the details that the president had to say on the deal. Go ahead.
I thought it would be useful for me to just give you some insight into where we were and why I think that we should have moved forward with a big deal. Essentially, what we had offered Speaker Boehner was over $1 trillion in cuts to discretionary spending, both domestic and defense. We then offered an additional $650 billion in cuts to entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. We believed that it was possible to shape those in a way that preserved the integrity of the system, made them available for the next generation, and did not affect current beneficiaries in an adverse way. In addition, what we sought was revenues that were actually less than what the Gang of Six signed off on. So you had a bipartisan group of senators, including Republicans who are in leadership in the Senate, calling for what effectively was about $2 trillion above the Republican baseline that they've been working off of. What we said was give us $1.2 trillion in additional revenues, which could be accomplished without hiking taxes, tax rates, but could simply be accomplished by eliminating loopholes, eliminating some deductions, and engaging in a tax reform process that could have lowered rates generally while broadening the base.
Okay. So let's review that. That's was the president just an hour or two ago in his press conference. He says $1 trillion in cuts to spending, domestic and military, $650 billion in cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, which is completely solvent, and I don't even know why that's on the table. And then 1.2 in tax revenue increases, right? That was the deal?
Right. But, I mean, when you talk about tax increases. It's very slippery, and it really depends on where you draw the line, specifically the baseline. He mentioned the baseline there. The Bush tax cuts are going to expire at the end of 2012.
Right.
So by the CBO's reckoning, that is the baseline, and that will increase our revenue collection by $4 trillion over the next decade, because that's how much the Bush tax cuts cost. So when you say we're going to raise revenues by $1.2 trillion, mm-hmm. in their conception of it, they are assuming an extension of the Bush tax cut. So really, it's a tax. It's a cut. It's an overall cut from the CBO baseline, because it assumes that the Bush tax cuts aren't going to expire. So it's actually a $2.8 trillion tax cut. So listen to what the Democrats or what the White House offered the Republicans here: $1 trillion in entitlement cuts.
Yep.
$650 billion in Social Security, Medicare, or $1 trillion in discretionary, $650 billion Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and a $2.8 trillion tax cut.
Yeah.
And they still said no.
Which is, I know, it's absolutely unbelievable. The thing that I've been thinking of, David Dayen, is that this reminds me of, remember Arafat? When he got what was probably the best deal he was ever going to get in the late 90s, right, with Bill Clinton down in Camp David, right, and he walked away from it.
Right, and he said to Clinton, if I take this, I'll be assassinated. Or he said something similar to that.
And,
I could not sell this to my people.
And that might,
it's very similar. If John Boehner took this deal, there is a likelihood that he would have been deposed as the Speaker of the House.
Let me take a quick break. Speaking with David Dayen, Mike Malloy Show, Brad Friedman in for Mike. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. I'm speaking with Fire Dog Lake's David Dayen about the breaking news this evening that John Boehner, House Speaker John Boehner, has pulled out of talks for the grand bargain, and he has touched off the wrath somewhat of President Obama, who gave a late evening press conference, followed by another by John Boehner. This after Boehner had sent him a letter essentially saying, you're just dead set on raising taxes, therefore we're going to get out, we're not going to talk anymore, and we're going to let the debt ceiling... I don't know what he thinks he's doing, and we'll play a little bit more of his press conference after this, after the break at the bottom of the hour, but what does he think he's doing here, David Dayen? Is he unable to handle his own caucus, or is this something that he is really willing to do, that he is really willing to see this whole house of cards collapse by letting the debt ceiling expire?
I mean, I think they just didn't have the votes for a big lift for to do this kind of big bargain deal. And that's why this should never have been attached to the debt limit increase in the first place. I mean, it was always going to be a very difficult thing when you're talking about essentially a transformation of the federal government and the responsibilities of the federal government. That was never going to be easy. It was never just a matter of take a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. You know, there are just a massive amount of responsibilities of the federal government. You're talking about $4 trillion is not a small number, and there are people and lobbyists attached to every step of that number. And so it just wasn't going to be that easy. So why in the world would you leverage a routine bill increasing the debt limit, which is all that says is we're going to pay the bills that we've racked up? That's all the debt limit is. It's just saying we are going to allow ourselves to pay the bills that have been racked up by Congress, successive Congresses over the years. Was... So if you're not willing to do that, if you're willing to hold that hostage, the consequences are absolutely catastrophic because they're inevitably going to result in a default and a manufactured financial crisis. And honestly, you can give it to both sides on this one. Both the Republicans used it as leverage, and then later on down the line, the president used this thing and still in his press conference used it and said, you know, the bare minimum is raising the debt limit, but I think this is a great opportunity to deal with our problems with deficit and debt. He was the one that has forced the issue on this and wanted, really seriously wanted, to put this grand bargain together. So both sides, now having seen this fall apart, are left with less than 2 weeks until a default event, the very first in the history of the U.S. government. And it's absolutely irresponsible for them in the first place to have attached this giant deal with all these moving parts that was going to take months upon months to get people comfortable with to a something this catastrophic that can happen.
Should he have, in your opinion here, David, he should have never even gone into these bargain talks at all, said, you know, raise this debt limit, like the debt ceiling, the way you have for every other president going back decades, give me a clean bill and that's it? Is that...
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that should have been done is that this should have been taken care of way back last December when Obama had something that the Republicans wanted. They wanted to extend the Bush tax cuts. And that was a perfect opportunity to say, I will extend the Bush tax cuts. And in the scope of that negotiation, you will also raise the debt limit so you can't take me hostage with the full faith and credit of the U.S. government.
This guy has never been known for his negotiation skills. David, can you stick around beyond the bottom of the break here?
I actually can.
You
got to go.
You
got to
go. Then, okay, we'll come back with more. David Dayan from Fire Dog Lake, thanks for jumping in, brother. I really
Thank
do appreciate
you very
it.
Much.
News,
I appreciate
you bet. News.firedoglake.com. More. Much more right after this. The man who really runs the GOP, Grover Norquist, he's trying to tell the GOP what to do. Will they listen? We'll find out. Some breaking news from Grover, the guy who's really running the Republican Party, momentarily coming out of roll call. But first, play a little bit more of this press conference from President Barack Obama. Oh, I should say, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, Brad of bradblog.com. And I will take your calls on this matter if you want to get in, 877-520-1150 with your thoughts. What is going to happen? Why is this happening? And as usual, since we all know that Republicans are special people, they will go to the front of the line if they decide to call in. 877-520-1150. Flying monkeys are welcome. Okay, Boehner left the debt ceiling crises, fake crises talks today. President Barack Obama and came out and gave some comments about this and about the big deal that he had been trying to work on that Boehner walked out of for reasons that still are not completely clear. Here's a bit more of that press conference where the president was quite angry and called on Republicans to join him, congressional leaders to join him tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. sharp.
This was an extraordinarily fair deal. If it was unbalanced, it was unbalanced in the direction of not enough revenue. But in the interest of being serious about deficit reduction, I was willing to take a lot of heat from my party, and I spoke to Democratic leaders yesterday, and although they didn't sign off on a plan, they were willing to engage in serious negotiations, despite a lot of heat from a lot of interest groups around the country, in order to make sure that we actually dealt with this problem. It is hard to understand why Speaker Boehner would walk away from this kind of deal. And frankly, if you look at the commentary out there, there are a lot of Republicans that are puzzled as to why it couldn't get done. In fact, there are a lot of Republican voters out there who are puzzled as to why it couldn't get done. Because the fact of the matter is, the vast majority of the American people believe we should have a balanced approach. Now, if you do not have any revenues, as the most recent Republican plan that's been put forward both in the House and the Senate proposed, if you have no revenues at all, what that means is more of a burden on seniors, more drastic cuts to education, more drastic cuts to research, a bigger burden on services that are going to middle-class families all across the country. And it essentially asks nothing of corporate jet owners. It asks nothing of oil and gas companies. It asks nothing from folks like me who've done extremely well and can afford to do a little bit more. In other words, if you don't have revenues, the entire thing ends up being tilted on the backs of the poor and middle-class families. And the majority of Americans don't agree on that approach. So here's what we're going to do. We have now run out of time. I told Speaker Boehner, I've told Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, I've told Harry Reid, and have told Mitch McConnell, I want them here at 11 o'clock tomorrow. We have run out of time, and they are going to have to explain to me how it is that we are going to avoid default. And they can come up with any plans that they want and bring them up here, and we will work on them. The only bottom line that I have is that we have to extend this debt ceiling through the next election into 2013. And the reason for it is we've now seen how difficult it is to get any kind of deal done. The economy is already weakened. And the notion that 5 or 6 or 8 months from now we'll be in a better position to try to solve this problem makes no sense.
That was President Obama speaking earlier this evening, within the last about two and a half hours ago, I think, at the White House after John Boehner had walked out of the talks over this fake debt ceiling crisis. It's not a fake crisis because it's a real crisis, because the GOP has decided it will be. They are fiscal terrorists. They want to burn down the House, apparently, to make their point, I guess. I don't know. Or they think that the president is going to give in at the last minute. And I suspect he just may do that. He just may go ahead, give him a whole bunch of cuts and get that debt ceiling raise and never get those revenue increases, leaving us with the Bush tax cuts still in place as we head into 2012. We will see if that happens. In the meantime, Grover Norquist. Well, let me give you this. This is from John Boehner, actually. Here's a piece. He came out about 15 minutes later after the president, gave a few remarks, and here is what John Boehner, Speaker of the House, says is the sticking points in this in these negotiations.
Now, let me just say that the White House moved the goalpost. There was an agreement on some additional revenues until yesterday, when the president demanded $400 billion more, which was going to be nothing more than a tax increase on the American people. And I can tell you that Leader Cantor and I were very disappointed in this call for higher revenue. But secondly, they refused to get serious about cutting spending and making the tough choices that are facing our country on entitlement reform. So that's the bottom line.
They refused to get serious about cutting spending. Now, you heard the president of the United States say a little bit earlier in this press conference that he was prepared to cut $1 trillion from spending, discretionary spending, and military spending, $650 billion from Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, which, by the way, is completely solvent out through, I think it's 2036 for Social Security. And yet he was willing to cut $650 billion from those three programs, $2.8 billion in tax cuts, and $1.2 billion in tax revenue. raising revenue by letting the Bush tax cuts expire and other methods. And that's what John Boehner says was not serious. Are you kidding me, John Boehner? Now, the point that he made that they had an agreement about $800 billion and the president tried at the last minute to add another $400 billion, we don't know if that's true. Apparently, the White House says that is not, and they have paperwork to prove it, to show the timeline that that was untrue and that they are going to release that paperwork. I don't believe they yet have. They might while we're on the air here, and if they do, we'll try to carry it for you and let you know who is telling the truth here. But that was the deal. And I said earlier that it reminded me of the Arafat deal back in the 90s, that he got one of the best deals he was ever going to get from Israel, and yet he walked away because he said he would be assassinated if he took it. Well, John Boehner, I guess, is looking at his party and thinking he might be assassinated, not literally, but destroyed by these Tea Partiers who just have convinced themselves that spending is what the problem is here and why the employment rate is what it is and why people can't find a job, when spending has nothing to do with it except that if you spend more, you might be able to put people back to work. But never mind that. That has to do with reality and facts, and they may not be interested in that. Nonetheless, the main assassinator here, or at least the guy behind any such figurative assassination, would be Grover Norquist for Americans for Tax Reform, who has gotten all of these Republicans to say, no, anything, anytime you raise taxes in any way, shape, or form, even if you give a tax cut back, that is a violation of this pledge that all of you have signed. Well, yesterday, Grover Norquist with the Washington Post, in the editorial board, and we played the audio. We may still have it around. I don't know if you have it, Tony, grab it. But he said, no, letting the tax cuts, the Bush tax cuts, expire would not be a violation of that pledge. That was the signal that he sent yesterday. And now today, following that press conference you just heard with John Boehner, Grover Norquist said, this is according to roll call here, and thanks to Lady Cab Driver in the BradBlog.com chat room for pointing us to it. Grover Norquist said Friday night that Republicans should let the debt ceiling go up and take their fight for spending cuts to the voters in 2012. In an interview on CNN right after Speaker Boehner announced he was abandoning debt talks, Norquist was warned against allowing a default, saying, quote, I assume it's a disaster. It is gambling with the economics of the country to get that far, Norquist said. Rather than close the government down or go into default, let's take it to the American people, says Norquist. Go into the next election and fix things then. At a press conference a few minutes prior to that, Obama had referenced Norquist's anti-tax pledge, something the most congressional Republicans have signed, and said his offer would have complied with the pledge. So the offer that he was giving to Republicans would have complied with the pledge that all of these Republicans have signed, that all of these Republicans have put before their oath of office, the oath to defend the Constitution and the United States of America. And yet, they still wouldn't do it. They still walked away. So, Norquist went on to say, I would certainly argue that it is better to let the president to make this decision all by himself as long as there's not a tax increase and not phony cuts, said Norquist. Norquist's position contrasts sharply with other conservative groups, many of which are demanding nothing short of a constitutional amendment to balance the budget, you know, before allowing any debt limit increase. How ridiculous. So now, GOP, you've got the okay to move ahead. Are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? Are you going to take this country to the brink? Because, you know, if you're going to do that, as I said last night, I'm almost in favor of it. Because I don't think anything is going to change in this country until this country gets to see the type of terrorists that are now running the Republican Party. And that's what they are. And that's what they're behaving like when they have created this completely phony scheme. This completely phony scheme to, I don't know what the hell, I was going to say to take down this country, to decrease spending. Why? What does any of it have to do with jobs? None. And they know it. All right. Let me take a quick call, and then we'll take a quick break. One quick call, one quick break, and then we'll be back with more of your calls. 877-520-1150. Do I have time, or should I just go around and I'll tell you what. Give us a call. Get in line right now. 877-520-1150. Next hour, I'm going to give you a break from this. I'm going to give me a break from this because, to be honest, this is such an enormous waste of time. It is completely phony. It is not putting anybody back to work. It is threatening to knock people, you know, out of work if they let this debt ceiling expire without raising it. And, you know, it's just, I'm tired of these goddamn phony crises that these Republicans, this gun that these Republicans are putting to the head of this nation. I don't know what point they're trying to make. Anyway, I'm sick of it. So we're going to change it up a little bit in the next hour and talk about talk about the 2004 election in Ohio, because we've got some new news. Your calls right after this. Brad in for Mike Malloy. That's what the Republicans want. I don't know what the hell they want. Well, I do know. They, you know, they just want to destroy the nation. That's it. What else? What else are they going to do? Unbelievable. Brad in for Mike Malloy, watching this debt ceiling theater, this kabuki theater, this ridiculous crisis that has been hoisted upon all of us, whether we like it or not. 877-520-1150. Let me get in a couple calls here. Bob in, there we go. Bob in San Francisco. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What is on your mind?
Hi, I'm looking at Boehner and thinking moving the goalpost to him, that's what he's seeing is the goalpost that Corbin Orcus is moving. He's getting whiplash,
yeah,
trying to follow the zig-zag-zig. Maybe when he sees that third one that now again says that expiration is not really, he seems to say it's a tax hike, or in any case he says let them do it, argue at this election, we'll
yeah,
just raise it.
Yeah, Norquist has freed his minions to raise the debt ceiling. He has said it's okay. He has given his blessing. And so what's the holdup now?
Yeah, Nancy offered total no revenues deal, $2.5 trillion. And I went to law school. That's number one day in contracts class, offer and acceptance.
Yep.
Boehner's trying to give himself cover to actually appear to accede to the Nancy thing, but that did it. I mean, unless he's Arafat, and actually Arafat had 3% that he was holding out for.
Mm-hmm.
This is 100%.
Yep. I mean, they're getting everything. And what my concern at this point is that Obama is going to be so desperate to get that debt ceiling raised that he's going to take it. They're going to say the Republicans are going to say, okay, we'll do it at the last minute. We'll give it to you, but we insist on, you know, X number of trillion or a billion or whatever in more tax cuts or some nonsense like that. Bob, thanks.
Well, they did it in the budget, 32 to 40 billion. I mean, that was an Arafat moment.
Yep.
And, you know, there's nothing to say that they ever took contracts in law school. So, you know, they will move their goalposts if they want. But, you know, 3 weeks ago, it was a done deal, 6-1 cuts. David Brooks saying, you know, this is a no-brainer, yep, of all time.
Yep. Best deal.
Now, again, he's...
Best deal they were ever going to get. Best deal they were ever going to get. And I hope he goes down in history the way Arafat did, where we all remember years later, yes, he blew the best deal he was ever going to get. Bob, I got to run. I want to get in one more call before the top of the hour.
Right.
I appreciate your call, my friend. Thanks. Let me get to David in St. Paul. Hey, David, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Yeah, hey, Brad. I enjoy listening to you as much as Mike, so take that as a compliment.
I do indeed. Thank you, sir.
All right. Hey, I just have to say, maybe Obama's being a genius here, and he knew that Boehner was going to pout and run away from the table, you know, like a two-year-old child, and now he can say tomorrow morning when the four of them meet that, hey, you know what? You lost your deal. I want a straight-up clean bill, and that's it. None of this other garbage, you know, included in it.
Well, that's, you know what, that's when I was on the way over to the studio here, Lawrence O'Donnell was saying that on MSNBC, that, oh, this is what Obama wanted in the first place, and he's a genius because that's what he's going to get. But I don't know. I don't know that he's such a genius, but... Go ahead.
From here on out, why don't the if the Republicans are going to oppose everything, why not just reverse the legislation that we want to do, and then we can get everything passed? You know, let's say no one gets health care. Well, the way the Republicans are, then everyone will get health care.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Let's say we don't want any tax cut, or we want all the tax cuts.
Reverse
the Republicans. You know, let's just. See if that works. See how ridiculous we can get here.
There's some ridiculous Brady Bunch-style reverse psychology.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Brad.
You bet. Thanks. I appreciate the call, David. If Obama is playing chess, as people have said for so long about him, and I never thought he was, and it was clear that he's a terrible negotiator, in my opinion. But even if we give him the credit and say that Obama is playing chess, a caller called in earlier, and they weren't able to hang on, but I saw it up here on my call screen that Obama is playing chess. All right, well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Obama's playing chess. Fine. Then the GOP is playing nuclear war. That's it. That's it. I mean, you know, whatever it is, they're against it. It doesn't matter what it is. Do you folks out there who still support this party, and believe me, I'm not a huge fan of the Democrats, but do you people out there who still support the Republican Party stand by this behavior? Do you buy into what they're doing? Is this okay? Is this what you signed up for? Are you proud of yourselves? Fiscal terrorism. Make no mistake about it. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. When we come back, we will change the topic. And then later in the show, we'll take more of your calls on this. But Bob Fitrakis on Ohio election fraud coming up right after this. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all around swell fellow from bradblog.com, drafted into duty to broadcast live from the left coast here as the sun sets in Los Angeles. Glad you could join us 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to try momentarily to change up the topic a little bit. I'll change it right now, although not necessarily for the better. The twin terror attacks in Norway, says CNN and AP, now has the death toll from that youth camp where the guy dressed up as a cop, apparently, and started shooting. The death toll, AP now has it up at 80 dead at this youth camp. Not good. And meantime, we're back in this country making up creating crises that are just complete and utter nonsense. And at this point, vote them out. Vote them out. If this is how they're going to behave, vote them out. But good luck doing so with the voting system that we have. I'm going to talk about that in a second, but I got one last caller on the line here who wanted to talk about this debt ceiling nonsense. And then in the next hour, we'll take your calls the entire time on anything you want to talk about, including this or anything else. Mark in San Francisco, you had a thought about this GOP fiscal terrorism.
Brad, I think that what is going on now fits right into Naomi Klein's shock doctrine, the shock doctrine for a developed nation.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, too, I don't believe Grover Norquist really wants or expects these Republicans to come around and sign anything right now, because Grover Norquist has always been for wanting to see a state go bankrupt. And that's so it will lead into so that like the Chicago Boys economics thing.
Has he called for a state to go bankrupt? I mean, we know that he said he wants government to be small enough that we could drown it in the bathtub. But
he
I don't know.
Actually,
yeah.
He's actually said that he would like to see a state go bankrupt. He didn't name any state.
Yeah.
He has actually said that.
Right.
And this really does fit in for how to get the free marketeers and the Chicago economics people that went into Chile and so forth. This is how to do it in a developed nation. To get their economy to fail through either inflation or monetary collapse.
Oh, yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they go for the whole ball of wax.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we certainly we do that abroad. And your suggestion is that the GOP is now doing it here. And Ernest Canning, our legal analyst at Bradblog.com, has written about that quite a bit at Bradblog, basically saying they are applying those same principles to our country. And maybe you're right there. I'll tell you what, I think Grover Norquist is looking at this, and he's seeing a lot of fingers pointing at him right now, and I think he knows it's going to be his ass on the line if these guys let the default happen. And that's why I think he's getting a little scared at this point, and he's saying, oh, no, it's cool, go ahead, raise that debt ceiling. I think that's the best thing to do, raise the debt ceiling. Actually, on this one, I'm going to take him at his word because I think he knows his ass is going to be in a sling if they move forward with this and they say, hey, I signed Grover's pledge. I have no choice. I cannot vote to increase tax revenues in any way, shape, or form. And I think, you might be right. And I might be right. We'll see.
I think it's just cover.
Well, you might be right. But in the meantime, Mark, you've also got the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, of all people, saying that defaulting on our debt is not an option. The result from political action, inaction, could be devastating. You've got more than 450 corporate CEOs saying now is the time for our political leaders to put aside partisan differences and act in the nation's best interest. You know, you've got the Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, Republican, far-right Republican, you know, goes out to these Koch meetings every year. I think he's been there every year for the past 8 years, these Koch brothers meetings, saying that default would be devastating for our country. And, of course, Ronald Reagan, that lefty pinko commie, said some years ago that if the debt ceiling is not raised, it would interest would skyrocket, the financial markets would have instability, federal deficit would soar. So, I don't know. We'll see who's right on this one, but I'm going to keep my promise and move on to another topic here for at least a bit, Mark. I appreciate your call, brother.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So I'm going to do my best, at least for a few minutes, change the topic, and we're going to be talking with Bob Fitrakis about some of this at the bottom of the hour. So do stay with us because we do have some new news out of Ohio in this long-running Mike Connell case, the IT GOP guru who set up the election system in 2004 in Ohio, who died suddenly and tragically in a plane crash. After it is said he was being threatened by Karl Rove, blah, blah, blah. We will get to all of that in a moment. But related to this, and I say vote him out. Vote him out. Yeah, vote out these jerks, these creeps who would do this kind of this terrorist behavior that these Republicans are doing right now. Vote him out. Well, good luck doing that. Because folks who know me, who know my work at Bradblog.com, know what I cover a lot of. It is our electoral system. They are gaming the electoral system, as you know now, I hope, through these photo ID restrictions at the polling place, trying to keep Democratic-leaning voters from being able to vote. But even if they can vote, even if they are able to vote, what I have been warning about, and so few people really still are and have, is the problem with our electoral system, that we can't see it, that it's not transparent. And so, you know, you could do whatever you want. And I hear Democrats, liberals, progressives saying, oh, yeah, this would be great if Michelle Bachmann ran for president because she'd be so easy to beat. Really? Are you sure? Just a couple of weeks ago, in Florida, this comes out of, a hacker by the name of Abhaxas, at least that's how we know him or her, over on the Twitters, was able to hack into the Florida voting database. And he released, I'm going to call him a he, I don't know if it's a he, but I'll say it's a he. He released a whole bunch of code from that he says, and it sure looks like it, is from the Florida e-voting database. It includes ballot definitions, includes poll worker usernames and passwords. And when he released it, he said, quote, "So this is a little ironic. Here is inside details of Florida voting systems. Now, who still believes voting isn't rigged?" he said. "If the United States government can't even keep their ballot systems secure, why trust them at all? Fail," he said. Or she said, whoever Abhaxas was when he or she released this code. Abhaxas, I believe, is involved in the hacktivist group Anonymous or Lulz, SEC, or one of those groups. I don't know for sure. I had invited him on the air to talk about this, and he looked like he might, maybe. He said, "I'm thinking about it." But that was after I had asked him a few questions over the Twitters, and you can reach me at the Twitters at the Brad Blog. Oh, and by the way, the bradblog.com chat room is up and rolling. Stop on by. So on the Twitters, I had asked him where he got the idea, this Abhaxas, to hack into the Florida voting database. And I asked him how long it took. And he said back in short, "I got the idea from it taking roughly 10 minutes to have read-write access to their systems. If I did it," he said, "who else has?" He was able to do that in 10 minutes, he claims. Now, when this came out about 2 or 3 weeks ago now, I think, this code, some people said, "Well, what's really in that code? Let's see, the names Joe Lieberman, John Kerry, Wesley Clark, Carol Moseley Braun, John Edwards." So apparently this was old data from, what would this be, 2004. What was so important in that data? Someone else had asked him on Twitter, and he responded by saying, "The information isn't important. It's the fact that access was gained to the system so easily equals a flawed system." Oh, do you think? He then went on to say, "It's not just Florida. You could pick any state at random and get the same results." And he is absolutely right. He said he does not have a political agenda. He just enjoys exposing insecure networks. Now, I asked Abhaxas to join me in to talk about this and how easy it was and how he did it and why he did it and all of that. And as I said, he was thinking about it. And then he apparently decided not, because he stopped talking to me over at Twitter. I don't know what I did wrong, but that's what happened. I spoke about this a little bit earlier on the KPFK. I do a show on Pacifica Radio Networks on Wednesday, and I talked a little bit about this and noted that he had gone, that Abhaxas had gone silent, and I was concerned that maybe he had been one of those who were arrested in this FBI chain of arrests. They had arrested a couple of dozen folks involved with Anonymous and LulzSec and all of that. But no, just to give you an update there, Abhaxas is back on Twitter, so if he was arrested, he's out on bail, or he was not arrested at all. But in any case, I'm going to have more news on this from a CIA person who has been warning about exactly this, about exactly what Abhaxas showed us that we could do, and then how this all applies to Ohio. Brad, in for Malloy. Welcome back. It's 22 minutes after the hour. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike, who is in Seattle this weekend for the Progressive Voices Conference with our affiliate AM 1090 out there. So if you're in Seattle, go see him. And Randy Rhodes. And I don't know if Stephanie's there. Some other, maybe, Mike Papento. I don't know. A whole bunch of folks, good folks out there. Go out and please do tell them that I said hello. Okay. Well, Back in 2009, the Brad blog reported on this warning given by CIA cybersecurity expert. Let me say that again. CIA cybersecurity expert Stephen Stigall. He gave a talk, a rather stunning presentation, I should add, to the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, the EAC, theoretically responsible for overseeing our electronic voting system in this nation. They're not. They're wholly corrupt and everything else. But that's what the role of the U.S. EAC did. And Stephen Stigall gave this remarkable presentation at this field hearing in Orlando, of all places, back in March of 2009. Now, we covered it at bradblog.com, and Greg Gordon at McClatchy covered it at the time, but that was about it. That was about it. Now, I talked before we went to the break about this guy, this hacker, Abhaxas, who was able to, in 10 minutes, he says, get into the e-voting system in Florida, and actually, I think it was in Orlando, ironically enough. You've seen news, you know, the hacking scandal from News of the World. Journalists are able to hack cell phone systems. You saw that Anonymous or Lulzsec or one of these guys were then able to hack News of the World or hack The Sun to show that Rupert Murdoch, to claim that Rupert Murdoch had died. They were able to take down the website of News International. Hackers have been able to make short order of PayPal, MasterCard, Visa, the Pentagon, the CIA, and yet we continue to use electronic voting systems that are just as vulnerable, if not way more vulnerable than any of those systems, than the MasterCard site, for crying out loud, than PayPal. So Stephen Stigall gave this talk, what are we here now, 4 years ago, 3 years ago? In 2009, so a little over 2 years ago, that nobody paid attention to. He said, among the things that he said, I'm not a politician, a political analyst. I looked at this as a computer network. He was looking at elections abroad, e-voting systems abroad, because they can't look at systems here. He said, so I looked at it as a computer network, as a computer security issue. You've heard the old adage, follow the money. Here I follow the vote, and wherever the vote becomes an electron and touches a computer, That is an opportunity for a malicious actor potentially to get into the system and tamper with the vote count or make bad things happen. He said an electronic voting machine is a computer. That's the way we look at it. It has memory. It has so-called firmware. It has software built into the hardware of the machine to tell it what to do. And most interestingly, not only can it be networked, but it can be interrogated from outside. It's a computer. That's what it is. And because it's a computer, it carries with it all the vulnerabilities that a computer has. When I look at a foreign country, I suspect that the regime may be playing games with the computer component of the election system. One of the first questions I ask, where are those machines stored? Or where are they stored, period, long before election day and afterwards? And I want to know if those machines can be interrogated electronically, remotely, on election day. Is there a wire or a connection connecting those machines to, quite frankly, the public internet? And he went on, and he talked about the vulnerability of these systems, that he has seen them actually hacked in foreign countries. And he talked about this man-in-the-middle attack, the way that hackers can get in between the data, the votes as they are cast, and before they are reported. And that has been the concern for some time in the state of Ohio concerning what may have happened in the 2004 election, when in the middle of the night in Ohio in 2004, when it was the only state that the entire nation was waiting on to find out who would be the president of the United States in 2004, all of a sudden the computers moved, the reporting system moved for the results from Ohio to some right-wing website down in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Why did that happen? Well, folks have been looking into that for the last 8 years at this point, and we've got some new news on that. We're going to talk about it after this break with Bob Fitrakis, the investigative journalist from Ohio. You are listening to Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. In for Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Scaring the nation with guns and ammunition. Police. No, you won't. You can try, but it won't work. And it's not worth fighting for. I will be fighting for it, Republican, Democratic, Green, Libertarian, Independent alike. If you're going to take the time to vote, then I think you ought to have it counted. You ought to have it counted accurately. And we ought to be able to know that it was counted accurately. Joining me momentarily will be Bob Fitrakis from FreePress.org, a great investigative journalist and attorney with some news on the 2004 Ohio election, Mike Connell, Karl Rove case. But just to wrap up and sort of tie things together, by the way, that was Victoria Parks, who's a great patriot from Ohio herself. Who wrote, "My Vote Don't Matter Anymore," based on a story that she was told in 2004 by someone at the polls. You can check her out at victoriaparks.com. I always I play a lot of her. I play that song a lot, and so I ought to give her credit every now and again. So there we go. Go check her out. I was talking about that CIA guy who gave a presentation, CIA cybersecurity expert, who gave a presentation to the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission back in 2009, warning that e-voting is not secure. And one of the things that he said reminded me of what has been alleged to have happened in Ohio. Not precisely, but pretty damn close. Here's what he said when he was talking about the ruling party in Ukraine in the 2004 election that you recall. It was about a month after our election here in this country. And, of course, Colin Powell and George Bush came out at the time and said, well, there was fraud there in that election. They need to run it over. Well, how did you know there was fraud, Mr. President? Because the exit polls said one thing and the results said another. Where does that sound familiar? My head almost fell off at the time. Because it's fraud when it happens in other countries. Apparently, it's not fraud when it happens here. Everything's just fine. In any case, so this CIA guy, Stephen Stigall, was looking at that the case in Ukraine, and he said that the ruling party was monitoring the vote count coming in from different parts of the country, and they were making subtle adjustments to the vote. In other words, he said, intersecting the votes before it goes to the official computer for tabulation. That's a CIA cybersecurity expert warning our U.S. Elections Assistance Commission about the problems with e-voting, the problems that we don't pay attention to. Now, back in Ohio, this is damn near what was alleged to have happened in this case, this election fraud case that continues to move forward from 2004. That bad guys were able to pull a man-in-the-middle hack, essentially get in between not necessarily the tabulation before it was reported to the public, but the actual results. The tabulators would have the results, and then before it would get to the state reporting system, the state website, it would be interrupted by a man-in-the-middle attack, and it would be changed and hacked at that point. Well, there has been a long-running 2004 election fraud case concerning exactly that. And to talk about some new developments in that case, I'm joined by Bob Fitrakis, our old friend. He's an Ohio's award-winning investigative journalist and editor of the Columbus Free Press. That's freepress.org. He's a political science professor in the Social and Behavioral Sciences Department at Columbus State Community College, where he won the Distinguished Teacher Award in 91. Oh, he's got all kinds of Ph.D. in political science from Wayne State. I could go on and on. He's also the author of the co-author of What Happened in Ohio, a documentary record of theft and fraud in the 2004 election. He's co-authored 10 other books, including How the GOP Stole America's 2004 Election and is rigging 2008, the companion summary book to the 767-page volume, Did George W. Bush Steal America's 2004 Election? So this man knows of what he speaks. He also happens to be an attorney, and he is an attorney in this King Lincoln Bronzeville versus Ohio Secretary of State case that continues to this day and has a bit of breaking news. Hey, Bob, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Glad to be back, Brad.
Good to have you here. Now, let's see. I was going to try. This is not easy because this is a huge story. But what I was going to try in about a minute's time was to bring us up to date with this entire mess, this entire Mike Connell story, and then get us up to where we are today. So I'm going to try that with your permission.
Sure.
Okay, so the 2004, we got a 2004 election mess, questions about the results, serious questions about what happened in the middle of the night when all of a sudden the Ohio Secretary of State's website goes down that was reporting the election results. We later on find that it had moved in the middle of the night, the website, to Chattanooga, Tennessee, to some very far right-wing outfit by the name of Smart Tech. And, Bob, I'll let Bob give you some information on who Smart Tech was. But then the ensuing months, we've got a recount that was rigged. We've got a couple of people in Cuyahoga County. That's Cleveland, the largest county, I think, in of Ohio's 88 counties, receive the maximum sentence for having rigged the recount to the 2004 election. A recount, I should add, that was asked for by the Green and Libertarian parties, not by John Kerry back in 2004. The Democrat. Now, so they rigged that election. In any case, word slips out as the years go on that the guy who helped develop, not help, did develop the election night reporting system for the state of Ohio, a guy by the name of Mike Connell. He's a right winger. He's getting a guilty conscience a little bit. Maybe he wants to talk about what might have really gone on in 2004. That, according to a Republican IT guy, a whistleblower who worked with Connell, a fellow by the name of Stephen Spoonamore. And so Bob Fitrakis and his partner, Cliff Arnebeck, actually go in this long-standing suit and say, we would like to depose Mike Connell. He fights that a little bit. They get the okay to do that in 2008, the day before the 2008 presidential election, because they make the case that they're concerned this could happen again in 2008. So they get that deposition under the agreement that it will be sealed so as purportedly not to disclose trade secrets. And that deposition happens. Nobody has seen that in the public until now. And a month or two later, just before Christmas, suddenly Mike Connell, who had been threatened, rumor has it, any case, reports, tipsters have said he had been threatened by Karl Rove that if he talks, he's going to be in big trouble. Mike Connell flying home from D.C. back to Ohio one night for a Christmas party in a single-engine Piper Saratoga. His plane goes down 2 miles short of the runway near Columbus. Was it Columbus, Bob? Where Mike Connell went down?
It was up in the Akron area.
Akron,
where the headquarters,
that's right,
are.
And he died, and a very strange investigation takes place. The plane is removed in the middle of the night. His wife, his sister are now very concerned about what really happened. The wife says, you know, she was able to find pieces of his brain around the accident site, you know, a day or two later. Very bizarre. In any case, I think that just about brings us up to date sort of where we are. Did I miss anything or get anything wrong there, Bob Fitrakis?
No, that was a great summary.
Sure. Okay, I'm exhausted. You take it from here. Okay, so now you've had this lawsuit, you got that deposition, but the case sort of peters out a bit because one of your main witnesses is now dead. And now here we are about 2 years later, and there has been a new filing in the case. And because I'm so exhausted bringing us up to date, Bob, please tell us what we now have in this new court filing in this 2004 election fraud case.
Well, the filing, which occurred on Friday, contains a variety of things, and we've gone public with that filing since it's public record. A couple of them are actually the architectural map, which has been on the internet in the past, but we were able to confirm it. Talked to an IT guy at the Secretary of State's office, and also part of the Smart Tech contractual map. So that's there, and of course, the Connell deposition, which is interesting, particularly for some of the questions asked at that, and also this whole contractual relationship. I mean, how does one of the most partisan men in America, good friend of Barry Jackson, you know, the lieutenant hitman for Karl Rove, how does he end up creating this architectural map for the 2004 election in Ohio And why does it have a huge back door?
And before you get, let me just help explain that to non-tech folks. And by the way, is this a cell line or a landline, Bob? Because you're breaking up a little bit.
It's a landline.
Okay.
But I'm worried.
It's not a good one. All right. So the architectural map, we're talking about the structure. This is basically how the computer servers, the website servers, how they would get results from the 88 counties and post them on the website of the Secretary of State on election night in 2004, and where they would be rooted and who had access to all of these computers, correct?
Correct, and I think we talked a little before the show. There's an exchange that people might want to look at in the transcript the day before the election, November 3rd, 2008, in which I asked Connell, you know, this is real time. I mean, essentially, it's not just a reporting system, and this was confirmed. Cliff Arnebeck had a email exchange there with Steve Spoonamore, a patriot and a Republican, by the way. Who says, look, this
who
is,
used to work for John McCain, we should add. Okay.
Yeah, and he said, look, they had access. I mean, they had the ability to input data. Why would a reporting system run by Republican partisans, evidence that it was owned by Mercer Reynolds, you know, the finance guy for Bush Cheney in 2004, with Jeffrey Averbeck, a, you know, born-again right-wing Christian ideologue who had direct ties to Amway and that whole operation.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing with input capacity on election night, getting the votes outsourced from Ohio to Chattanooga, Tennessee? Also, at the same point, they have a direct tie-in to the White House with GWB 43, a website.
So this is the same company, Smart Tech, who had, when those computers in Ohio went down and the entire system moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee in the middle of the night on election night, it went to Smart Tech, the same company that handled all of those millions of emails that supposedly disappeared on the the GWB43.com system. That was all handled out of the same place. These far-right partisans who had access to all of this. Correct? I'm describing that correctly.
Absolutely correct. The one thing they all have in common, whether it's, you know, Michael Connell at GovTech, and his big company is New Media, right? He's a Bush family IT guru, what they call, you know, the expert of interface, making different computer hardware and software systems talk to each other in ways that can't be detected. He goes back to, college guy in Iowa, a small group of people hanging around a fraternity to working for George Herbert Walker Bush, the former CIA director when he's elected in 1988, to Jeff Averbeck, another operative. And then on the ground in Ohio, they have the Rapp family triad, which was tied to the infamous butterfly ballot in Florida.
Oh, really?
So, they had it on their website for years. What they do, you know, GovTech, for example, they put on this hat and go, oh, new media, those are partisan rabid zealots for the Republican. But GovTech is a totally objective company, that just does work for the government. But they're all the same people.
And that was Mike Connell's company, GovTech. And he contracts with Smart Tech, which is down there in Tennessee, and which ran the GWB. And they're all working together. And not only are they far-right partisans running the George Bush website, the John McCain website, and everything else, but they're running the Ohio election night reporting system with the Secretary of State, who has access to that reporting system. And as it came out in the transcripts, I'm sorry, the deposition here that has now been released with Mike Connell, the Secretary of State had access, could have changed the numbers, as could have Smart Tech down in Tennessee. Everybody had access to this system, it seems.
Yeah, and then what you have is a absolutely unexplained. You've already referenced the Ukraine. The international gold standard is the exit polls. which these partisans, particularly Karl Rove, have now tried to discredit. They're still the international gold standard. I speak here as an election observer who wrote, co-wrote, and edited the International Election Observer's report on El Salvador back in the 90s. You know, I know what I speak. And the key thing we look at is the exit polls. So the exit polls are showing Kerry winning by 3%. Suddenly, in the wee hours of the morning after it shipped down to Chattanooga, Tennessee, to a partisan group of Republican operatives, and I do mean Republican operatives. For example, Smart Tech was the people that hosted the GOP convention, provided the internet services in 2008. In the wee hours of the morning, this partisan group, the vote seemed to flip. And then back here in Ohio, and they have access to the county tabulators, suddenly Bush is getting 130% of the vote in Clyde, Ohio. Two counties in Perry County, he's suddenly getting 122% of the vote, 118% of the vote. He's getting 98.66% of the vote in Concord Southwest in Miami County, which we went up and audited, and we found a 5,000 vote shift of phantom votes where there were actually more votes counted than people who signed into the polls.
Hey, hold the thought there. Bob Petrakis from Columbus Free Press, freepress.org, about this ongoing Ohio election fraud case from 2004. I'm going to ask him also after this break about Karl Rove, who he subpoenaed. Much more straight ahead. Brad in for Mike.
It's bad, you know.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Speaking with Bob Petrakis of freepress.org, investigative journalist and professor and attorney, about this ongoing, yes, 2004 election fraud case. We've got just a couple of minutes here before the top of the hour, Bob, so let me fire off some quick questions here. You subpoenaed Karl Rove, or tried to, in back late at the end of last year, I think, in New York, just after he had appeared on CBS's Face the Nation on a Sunday morning, subpoenaing him for this case. What is the status of that subpoena against Karl Rove?
Well, that's being argued out. Cliff Arnebeck, who's to be given great credit as the lead litigator, decided since Karl Rove was operating here and looked hand in glove with the Chamber of Commerce under one of these umbrella groups that we ought to ask him what was going on. And all of it is predicated that, like, this is the state-of-the-art election theft equipment. Every IT guy in America knows you can hack the vote through these systems. And it's ongoing. That apparatus, to some extent, that was put in place can be put back in place, although we should give Jennifer Bruner credit for warning us in the Everest study.
Everest, she's the now former Ohio Secretary of State that took over for J. Kenneth Blackwell. She was the Democrat. Bob, I leave it to you here because I am coming up against a hard break, but I do want to get the actual status of the Rove subpoena, and there is a caller who'd like to talk to you. Can you stick through for just a few more minutes through the top of the hour, through the news break here? All right, you can go ahead and take about 6 minutes, get a drink of water, whatever. And then we'll just keep Bob for one more quick segment and Mike's call. And if you want to call in on this or anything else, 877-520-1150. As the fight continues, as we head to yet another presidential election year, and we're still using the same crappy, unoverseeable, untransparent voting systems. It is remarkable. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. More, a little bit more, with Bob Petrakis of freepress.org right after this. Stay with us.
music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Program. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com, drafted into duty here for one more hour tonight, and I'll be back again Monday in for Mike Malloy, who is in Seattle at our affiliate AM 1090 up there in Seattle for the Progressive Voices Conference with a whole bunch of other progressive folks from the media, Randy Rhodes and Pap Antonio and so forth. So tell them all I said hello if you're up there in Seattle over the weekend for this great forum that I wish I was at, but I am not. I am here, and I'm delighted to be here. Bob Fratrakis was kind enough to hold over here for just another minute or two to answer some questions on this on these new developments in the 2004, yes, you heard me right, 2004 election fraud case out of Ohio that continues to this day. There has been a release of information, this deposition with Mike Connell, the Republican IT guru who created the election reporting system in Ohio back in 2004, at the same time that he was creating and running the George Bush website, the GWB.com email site where millions of emails are said to have disappeared, all of that stuff. He was all involved in that. And after he gave his deposition, a month later, he went down in a plane crash in Ohio that he was piloting by himself, and he died. And now the deposition that Bob Fratrakis and Cliff Arnebeck, the lead attorney, were able to get on with Mike Connell has now finally been unsealed. That and the schematic from the Ohio Secretary of State's office showing that on election night, boy, who didn't have access to that system, Bob? the Ohio Secretary of State?
Neutral IT guys who are professionals.
Yeah,
like Bob Mangum, who was sent home. The state's key IT guy who's never been sent home. It's told to go home at 9 p.m. by the private partisan followers of Bush and Blackwell.
He was told on election night.
Yes.
He's the IT guy for the state, and 9 p.m. on election, presidential election night, they say, oh, thanks, Bob. We'll see you later. You're off the clock.
Yeah, you've always had to be here to 3, 4 in the morning. Why don't you take the night off and let the private partisan followers of Bush, operating under the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign, Ken Blackwell, take over for you?
And incredibly, what the Secretary of State's office has said about these computer systems that went down in Ohio and all of a sudden came up at the server down in Tennessee where they were running, I think the Swift Boat was run out of there too, wasn't it? The Swift Boat website?
Yes, absolutely. They were all on the same pile of servers in the basement of the old Pioneer Bank building in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
And the theory when you guys found out about this happening in the middle of the night, moving the servers down there, was that, oh, that was in case there was so much traffic in Ohio, this would be the backup system. If it went down in Ohio, it would be mirrored, essentially. If it failed in Ohio, it would be all of a sudden be mirrored and work out of Tennessee. But in this deposition that's now been unsealed, so you can finally talk about it, Mike Connell says that was not the case, correct?
Correct. Both he and Bob Mangum said that there wasn't supposed to be a mirror over situation if it failed. And Mangum's absolutely certain that, you know, I mean, they were using supercomputers here in Ohio. There was no scenario which provided a so-called denial of service. So the broader question is, who made that decision to outsource Ohio's vote to hardcore Republican operatives, a company owned by Mercer Reynolds, the finance guy for Bush and Cheney 04, and Jeff Aberbeck, this born-again Amway-tied person who now has taken over Connell's spot at GovTech.
And that allows those results that were shown on the website on election night in Ohio, that ended up determining the presidency. And you got Mike Connell in this deposition saying, under oath, to the best of my knowledge, it was not a failover case scenario, or it it was not a failover situation. So the question as to why it went down, why the system moved down to Tennessee, I suspect you have an answer for that, Bob.
Well, but let me refer to you to a Republican, Steve Spoonamore, who Cliff Hartbeck emailed. You know, this is one of the foremost cyber experts on earth. He works for, you know, government agencies. He works for the biggest banks to stop credit card fraud. And he goes, yeah, it wasn't designed as a mere over system to prevent failure. It was designed as a kingpin. It was designed to rip the vote off, to insert data.
And to be clear here, what we saw on that on election night, that was not these were not the vote tabulators. These were the results of what theoretically what the vote tabulators told us. So in this scenario, they would have had to, if in fact they changed the results that people saw on the website, they would then have to go back and change the tabulators or the ballots themselves in case anybody ever looked at those tabulators and ballots because they would not match up with the website results. Do I understand that correctly, Bob?
Yeah, but sadly, 59 counties accidentally destroyed all or most of their ballots. I think you've reported on this as well as the Free Press, right? You remember a large craft of coffee took out 20,000
yes.
of those ballots in Holmes County. Why they were making coffee in the voter vault, which is supposed to be secured by at least two locks and separate keys owned by both party, remains a mystery.
And ruined a lot of ballots. Yeah, because they were ordered, a federal judge, because of this case, said you have to hang on to those ballots in all 88 counties, and it was 50, was it 56 or 59
it
counties?
It ended up 56 originally, but it turned out to be 59 destroyed all or part, including Montgomery County, which argued that their letter of destroying ballots trumped a federal judge's court order.
So now the key witness, one of the key witnesses in the case here, Mike Connell, the IT guru who created the system, he dies in a plane crash under odd circumstances. So the case moves forward. You get permission from the judge in Ohio to subpoena Karl Rove, which you do last year. You give him that subpoena. You serve him to come in for a deposition to get Karl Rove under oath on the record, perhaps for the first time. And when does that happen? Where's that deposition, Bob?
Well, that's specifically related to what we felt was an ongoing visible conspiracy in Ohio involving Rove in the Chamber of Commerce.
Ah.
Since that passed, let's just say I talked to Cliff during break. All roads lead to Rove. And in due course, you know, Rove will be deposed. As we take discovery in this case, the question is, you know, whether we go after Averbeck first. But look, the real kingpin in all of this, the name that comes up, the name that holds Mike Connell together and Averbeck together and Barry Jackson together, is Karl Rove, the man who showed up in Warren County to thank them after they called a level 10 Homeland Security alert, which only happens when Bin Laden is in the neighborhood, and diverted the ballots down there in the southwest county.
They diverted the ballots and they locked down the counting room so that for the first time the public couldn't come in and watch the counting. The media couldn't come in and watch the counting because they declared an emergency that they said the FBI told them there was a terrorist threat. And since nobody in the FBI has said, oh, I didn't talk to anybody in Monroe County, Ohio. So, oh, I'm sorry, Warren County, Ohio, Warren County lockdown. So the questions persist there. So was that subpoena, was that quashed in Washington and now has to be re, help me out here, Bob, the Rove subpoena?
Those circumstances not being the immediacy problem, in the due course of discovery, as we reopen this case and this filing, I think does so very nicely, we'll get the Rove. The
okay.
question is simply how quick and how many lawyers, because he has, you know, massive legions of lawyers that jump out of the woodwork to say this man can't be under oath. And we suspect that is either because he won't remember anything, he'll have to take the fifth, or he'll have to come up with some of those incredible lies, like exit polls don't count, or, oh, yeah, Bush got 14,000 extra votes in Warren, Ohio, because Republican women hid in the afternoon only and didn't want to talk to exit pollers.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense still. So you're going to continue on this case, I suspect, clearly. Well, we'll see if Rove ever is taken in under oath. But you can read more about this at freepress.org. I've got the links to Bob's latest story with the filings, the deposition of Mike Spoonamore at bradblog.com. I do have a caller who has a quick question for you.
Sure.
Bob, you want to take a quick call here?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. Nancy from Akron, Ohio. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. I have a quick question for Bob Fitrakis.
Yes. I'm checking. There was an article maybe 4 to 6 weeks ago in our local paper with regard to our beloved Cuyahoga County, indicating, and the headline to it was almost bragging, that they had sent out 180,000 letters and they'd only gotten 80,000 responses, and wasn't this wonderful? They took 100 names off the list.
Voter caging. Yes. Are you familiar with that story, Bob? Thanks for the call, Nancy. Are you familiar with that story?
Well, if you go to freepress.org, between the 2004 and 2008 election, are you ready for this number? They purged 1.25 million voters in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
At least a million of those who are still eligible to vote had moved. 80% of them still lived in the county, could go down to the Board of Election and cast a vote. This has been ongoing. Between 2000 and 2004, they purged 305,000 voters in Ohio in three cities, Toledo, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, almost all in the inner city, 80, 90% Democrats. And worse than that, Brad, as you well know, they're now bringing in the private proprietary poll books.
Yeah.
Diebold, of course, before the 2004 election, these partisans who CEO Walden O'Dell pledged to deliver Ohio's electoral vote to George Bush, who raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for Bush and was hanging out at the ranch, his company accidentally purged 10,000 voters.
Yes, I remember.
In Cleveland.
And in Cleveland, and I remember the reading the emails from the folks who worked at Diebold saying, oops, we just dropped thousands of voters when we were putting together this voter registration system. We just purged thousands of voters, and Ken Blackwell won't even help us, Diebold. Nancy, thanks. I appreciate that call. But this is only going to get worse, I suspect, although I was impressed, Bob, to see John Husted, the new Republican. They got, once again, another Republican Secretary of State out there in Ohio, actually say no to this photo ID law that they're looking to pass in Ohio, even though he's a Republican. He said, no, I didn't sign up to knock people off the voting rolls. I thought that was hopeful. Do you share that same hope?
Yeah, I do. And partly, the major newspapers in Ohio are many things, primarily owned by, rich Republicans. But they have a fundamental faith in that people should vote. And the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Columbus Dispatch, all of them were sort of, why do we have to have the most repressive, draconian ID law in America? So I think Husted, in part, represents a almost lost tradition in the era of Karl Rove, right? That is, that elections should be held fairly and everyone has a right to vote.
That's unique for the state of Ohio from a Republican, but I'll take it. Hey, Bob, I got to run here. I really appreciate you hanging on this extra time here tonight. I appreciate all the work that you continue to do all of these years later, and I suspect you're going to have to do next year, whether you like it or not, in Ohio at freepress.org. Keep an eye on Fitrakis. If it happens in Ohio, as it usually does, he's the guy to go to. Thanks, Bob. Really appreciate
it,
my friend.
And I'm a big fan of Brand Blog. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. You're very kind. All right. When we come back, your calls, 877-520-1150 on this topic or anything else you want to talk about. The debt ceiling nonsense. The Republican terrorists who are holding the country hostage. The actual terrorist who we learned tonight apparently killed some 80 people. Some kids at this youth camp out in Norway. Of course, he was blonde and native, so it couldn't have been terrorism. It was just he was crazy, right? That's what they tell us. Anything you want to talk about, 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Get in now. Don't wait. Brad in from Malloy. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, 26 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike. Your call straight ahead, 877-520-1150. I ran a little bit long there, so we're going to have to take a quick break here, 877-520-1150. Before we go here, speaking of crazy, Haboob Hubbub. The dictionary defines a haboob as a thick dust storm that blows in the deserts. Arizonans, however, define a haboob as a jihadist harbinger of Muslim infiltration. Hearing local weathermen call Arizona's recent massive dust storm by a term they've used for decades, one Arizona resident said, "I am insulted that local TV news crews are now calling this kind of a storm a haboob. How do they think our soldiers feel coming back to Arizona and hearing some Middle Eastern term?" That was an actual quote. "If this is suddenly the guiding principle," writes Think Progress, "on acceptable vocabulary, Arizonans should eye words like algebra, pajamas, khaki, coffee, giraffe, lemon, orange, mattress, zero, and alcohol with suspicion, because they are all Arab words." Have we gone crazy? Answer, yes. Your calls right after this. Brad in for Mike. Better recognize your brothers. Everyone you meet.
Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go. And the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go.
That's just about what we have. 24 minutes to go here on the Mike Malloy Show. It is 34 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Taking some of your calls, 877-520-1150. The phone lines are jammed, so let's get right to it. And anything you want to talk about is just fine by me, though be as quick as you can with your question. Let's go to Gretchen in Claremont, California. Hey, Gretchen, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I'm calling you. I think you're on a delay, and I'm here in L.A.
Oh, you're in
L.A.
Yeah, you may be hearing the first hour of the show. How am I doing back there?
Well, I think you're doing great.
Oh, good.
I have to tell you that today Obama sold us out.
Yep.
There is absolutely no excuses that can be made for this guy now. I'm sorry. He's gone.
Yeah.
Many of us are just not going to vote for him anymore, or any Dems that support this ridiculous.
Now, how did he sell you out, Gretchen?
You know, in the first place, he should never have accepted the deficits along with raising the debt ceiling. Those are two different issues. He should have said, look, this is automatic. It's been automatic for years. You either are going to help me raise the debt ceiling, or I'm going to use the 14th Amendment, and I'm going to do it, and then you take the heat for it. I'll let the courts come after me later.
Now, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I presume you're talking about the $650 billion in cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security that were planned in this deal, supposedly, with John Boehner that has now fallen through since Boehner has walked out. Does he not come out better? Does Obama not come out looking better on the other side, showing that he was willing and able to do these things, but the Republicans were obstinate.
No, I think Obama comes out as a sellout because, first of all, they should not have been on the table.
Yeah.
Social Security has a trust fund of $2.6
trillion
unless he continues to give the payroll tax cuts, which go into, you know, taking away money from the trust fund.
Yeah.
No, Obama's a sellout.
Right.
He should never have put those things on the table.
All right. Thanks, Gretchen. I appreciate your call very much.
Thank you.
You bet. And let's go to on the similar topic here. Jeremy in Huntington Beach, California. Are you listening to that first hour, too, I'm guessing, Jeremy?
I am, yes. Okay. It's the right-wing's way. I mean, K-Talk, let's face it, they must be owned by right-wing people, and they filibuster liberal talk from 3 to 8. So anyway, yeah, I think Obama may just be a conservative Trojan horse. I mean,
wow.
The biggest right-wing Republican in the world could never have gotten the deal that he's putting out there. I mean, the cuts that he's actually offered up are so repulsive, even to the most, you know, right-wing voter. I mean, they're all for Medicare and Social Security, you know. These jackasses at the Tea Party, keep your government hands off my Medicare. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that you people need to be real, real wary of that, you know. I mean,
you people? Who?
I don't know, just the left, the supposed left. You know,
hang on, Jeremy. You people, meaning the supposed left, should be worried about Obama and we should throw him out?
I consider myself people call me left. I thought I was conservative, but, you know.
Who'd you vote for in 2008?
Nader,
okay.
Yeah. So, okay. It looks to me like a game of good cop, bad cop, you know what I mean, where Obama's like, they pretend fight. I mean, give me a break, man. How, it's bad enough that the right wing licks, you know, corporate boots, but for God's sake, I mean, if you listen to the voters, I mean, they were really, most of the actual voters are angry at Obama because, for one thing, he didn't end the war.
Yeah.
He gets punished by the right and the left for compromising. The last caller is 100% correct.
All right.
There is no excuse for this. Zero.
Okay.
We need to raise taxes on the rich and tell Republicans to go screw themselves for once.
Thanks, Jeremy.
They respect him.
I hear you, brother. I appreciate the call. I really do. And I got to move on because I got a lot of folks I'm going to try to get to. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your thoughts. I should also add Rosalind. We'll just say Rosalind B. She sent me an email because I had called this an Arafat moment for the Republicans, giving up the best deal that they would ever have, the way Arafat did, in my opinion, back in the late 90s with Bill Clinton. And Rosalind disagrees. She says, Brad, why do you keep on saying it was an Arafat moment? Let's be clear. The Israelis have never, I repeat, never given the Palestinians anything even approaching a fair deal. I wish you would stop saying that. The Palestinians have been shafted by the Israelis time after time. I wonder, do you agree with the proposition that Palestine should be declared a sovereign nation? The vote will be coming up pretty soon. I assume she means a vote on them being a sovereign nation. And yes, of course, they should. Absolutely. So there you go. Rosalind disagrees with me. 877-520-1150. Let's keep flying through these calls. Excuse me. Whitney in Kaplan, Louisiana. Whitney, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi. It's pronounced Louisiana by people here because it is kind of a loser place sometimes. But no, I love it.
Okay.
Anyway, I was part of the voter protection team in Dayton, Ohio. I flew in there. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time and went over there. And let me just tell you, we had a district that was 6 precincts. I worked 5 with an attorney who flew in from California. And it was mostly black, all the precincts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not one person in line was there to vote for George Bush. There were waiting, you know, it was the usual, you know, poor district, let's give them 3 machines and let them wait.
Yeah.
There were a lot of us that stood in line for people so they could go to the bathroom, et cetera. All right, so I go back to my hotel that night. There was one black fellow. This was, kind of funny. He kind of he was in a business suit, and this was in a quick district where I guess it was a little bit, you know, they had a little bit more money in the district. He snuck in and snuck out, would not stop and talk with us or anything. We were doing kind of exit polling things.
Well, he snuck in to vote and
yeah,
got out. Okay,
I guess he was he probably was the one that voted for Bush. Anyway, so I go back to the hotel that night and watched the results in that particular district, and I forget what it was, you know. Supposedly, it was 65-45 for Kerry.
Right.
There is no freaking way it was 65-45. And that was one of the ones that came in late. There
so it should have been, you're saying it should have been a lot higher for Kerry than 65-45?
Yeah.
Thanks, Whitney. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the ways that if they were shaving off votes, as Bob Fitrakis certainly alleges, as there is a lot of evidence to suggest that they did, if they did, the easiest thing to do is do it in the Democratic districts. I mean, if John Kerry won by a million votes in Cuyahoga County, who's going to notice if he won by, you know, if they change it so that to make it so that he won by 900,000 votes in Cuyahoga County, because he still won there, so who's going to think, you know? And people tend to look at the Republican counties. That's the ones you have to worry about. I don't know. The place where two people were, the two top election officials were sent to jail for gaming the recount was Cuyahoga County, the bluest county, Cleveland, in all of Ohio. So, hey, Whitney.
Well, I have one more thing to add.
Quickly.
At least 20% of the people were not on the rolls that were registered. And so they had to do
provisional.
One of those ballots. Yeah.
Yeah. And J. Kenneth Blackwell threw out something like 70% of them.
Yeah.
Pay attention, people. You don't have to just vote. You got to go and you got to fight and you got to protect.
There.
You know, Whitney, you know what it's like.
Right.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Keep up the fight.
Thank you, Whitney. Thanks for the call and for getting out there and doing your part at that poll. Really appreciate it. Let's fly over to Chuck in Roseburg. Where is it here? There we go. Chuck in Roseburg, Oregon. Welcome to the Mike Malloy, sir. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk about future voting. Maybe we could have the day off with pay.
Yeah.
I know people are rolling their eyes now. And paper and ink. Let's just get back to the government supplies the paper and the ink. You put your mark on the paper, and let's have a traditional thing of it.
Wow. So something you mean you can actually, citizens could oversee, and we could. Here's the thing. Remember this, Chuck. Paper and ink, yes. Absolutely, no question about it. That said, it ain't just getting the paper and the ink that you got to worry about. You got to worry about how those are counted. And if you watch what happened up in Wisconsin recently in the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, it's great to have paper and pen for your vote. It's a must for your ballot. But then you have to count it and count it in front of the people, not secretly inside a computer where it cannot be overseen, but in front of the people at the polls on election night, with the results posted at the precincts before those votes move anywhere. 100%
agreed.
Transparency. Thanks.
Exactly.
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate the call, sir. You bet. Let's go to back to Obama here in Los Angeles also. Ma in L.A. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Ma.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Okay, what I wanted to say is, it's called good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
With Obama and them and the Republicans. What they do is they both working for the same boss.
Yeah.
So what they do.
Who's
is
the boss?
They
who's,
run up
who's the boss?
The insurance companies and the big corporations.
Okay.
They both work for the same boss.
All right.
But they play us like they're not working for the same people. But what they do, what they're going to do is they're going to run up a debt and say, big debt, cut the poor people. Next year, they're going to still have that big debt. And they're going to cut the poor people. Next month, they're going to still have a big debt,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to keep continuing. And we're going to be here all Obama's presidency continuing to cut from the poor people.
I hear you, brother, and thanks for making that point and making some noise. Appreciate it, Ma. Hang in there, my friend. You got a good show ahead of you if you keep listening out there on K-Talk. It's going to be a good one. All right, let me go to 877-520-1150 if you want to get in just a few more minutes. Ron in Prescott. It's not Prescott. It's Prescott, and I know this because I was just there a week or two ago doing some camping. It's lovely up there in Prescott. Ron, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Good evening, Brad. Since we know that Bush lost the 2000 election and the 2004 election due to election fraud, he got in to the White House. Well, we know that members of the GOP were behind that. Now, the question is, is it possible that members of the GOP or people in the government could hire terrorists to perpetrate terrorist acts such as Oklahoma City or 9/11?
Of course they could, Ron, but boy, are you pulling together a lot of disparately connected or not connected dots. But I hear you, and I thank you for the call, and I've got to get to a break. So appreciate it, Ron. Take care up there, and give us a shout another time. You're listening to Brad Friedman. In for Mike Malloy, 877-520-1150. If you want to get in and connect some dots, I'd love to hear from you if we have time. Brad, in for Malloy. One more section ahead.
Say it's only a paper moon, sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
My thanks tonight to my guests, Bob Fitrakis and David Dayan. Of course, to Tony Sorrentino, the world's best engineer from K-Talk AM 1150 here. Thank you, Tony. My producer, Desi Doyen, and of course, For Earth in the chat room, the bradblog.com chat room. And naturally, Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to be here tonight. And again, with you next Monday, when I think we might, I'm not sure, we might have Robert Scheer Monday. He's good. If you don't know him, tune in. Also, if you're listening on MikeMalloy.com, please, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid, our good friend there. And let's see, do we have time? 877-520-1150. If you want to try to get in here, we will do that. See, I had all of this crazy, hysterical right-wing stuff that I can't do. You know, along the lines of that Haboob in Arizona. Maybe on Monday. We'll see. And I can't do it, of course, because of all our breaking news tonight with the president and Boehner walking out on the boner, walking out on the... All right. What else do I have? Any other business I need to do here? I thanked everybody in the chat room. I thanked everybody. That's it. Oh, tonight, if you missed any portion of the broadcast this evening, and if you are not a Mike Malloy podcast subscriber, you should be. However, if you're not, we'll let you off the hook this one time, as I'll post the archives of tonight's show late night tonight at bradblog.com. All right, quickly, let's see if I can get in the rest of these calls or close to it. Trejo, it's our old friend, lady cab driver, once again from Los Angeles. Hey, Tracy, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad, baby, how you doing?
I'm all right, baby. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just had to tell you so you can get a quick laugh.
All right.
About
and it's got to be a quick one because, of course, we're... All right,
because,
go.
Because, see, you know, I heard about all the things that he said about Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah.
And I heard about what he did to Nicole Sandler and all the things he did in the military. And so...
Well, and so for anybody who hey, so for people who didn't, he called Debbie Wasserman Schultz all kinds of terrible names. She's a congresswoman. And he helped Nicole Sandler essentially get arrested as something at an event down there. Nicole, of course, our good friend from RadioOrNot.com, who you should tune into. Anyway, so yes, you didn't know who he was, and
I didn't know who he was. So I listened to all these horrible things that he did, and I'm like, oh my God, what a horrible bastard!
Yeah.
And so then I heard on I guess Randy's show the other day when he was talking about I'm tired of people calling me an Oreo, and I'm like. Oh, my God. He's black.
Who called him an Oreo?
He called he said that people are calling him an Oreo and an Uncle Tom and all this. And I'm like, wait a second.
Well, Uncle Tom, okay, but Oreo, yeah, go ahead.
I'm like, oh, my God, wait a second, hold on. So I went on to the interweb machine called a computer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I typed in his name, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's a black man. Jesus Christ.
Oh, you
just, I had no idea
that
the man was black.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that when black people watch television and they're watching the news and they hear about some horrible crime being committed or committed, and we're like, please don't let him be black. Please don't let him be black. You know, I never have to worry about usually worrying about that kind of stuff when you talk about Republicans.
Yeah.
Please, you know, I don't usually have to say, please don't let him be black. Please don't let him be black.
So you're not, because we all know you're black because you posted your photo over on the Twitters or something. So he's not exactly making you proud, is he?
No, not so much. I thought you'd get a laugh out of that because, like I said, I tell people all the time I'm new to, you know, listening, watching stuff. And
I can't believe you didn't know, Tracy.
I didn't know.
And you didn't know even when you heard him. Your black dar is terrible. Get to work on that.
I know. No, I have killer rate gaydar. I know about Mark, like Marcus Bachman.
I know you, but your black dar is way off.
Dar is way off, and I'm sorry. I had no idea.
I love you, Tracy. I got to run because I want to see if I can get in one more call here, if possible. So hang on here because I know Des wanted to talk to you. All right. Tim in Riverside, I'm going to give you exactly 10 seconds, and maybe I'll get to Chris, too. What's on your mind, Tim? Quick.
Thank you, Brad. Social Security is paid for. I'm 60 years old. I've paid in all my life.
Yep. It ain't.
So how can they justify robbing it?
Yep. No, they, well, because they don't give a damn. They don't give a damn about you. They want to rob you any way they can. Any way they can rob you blind. It's completely solvent for another 25 years. You paid into it. They sniff at it as an entitlement, as if you're so, please. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate the call. Let me get to Chris here if I can. Can I? Quick, Chris, 10 seconds. What's your point in Bethel, Maine?
I want to make sure that it started on your show. I think that the left should start to discuss the Tea Party in terms of domestic terrorism. A 20% minority of the a population that, you know, basically threatens global financial instability to get its way is nothing more than, you know, a transparently illegitimate, you know, democratic.
Thanks, Chris. Threat. I got to go. We'll see you guys next week. Keep it lit, America. See you at bradblog.com.